listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting, our guest is waving, exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Wayne Fritz. Wayne, as everybody can tell, we have a special guest with us today. And, you know, I know that you guys are wondering, what is she? Is she a mixed martial artist fighter? Is she a coach? We have G.A. Anthony with us, and she is an author. And we are so glad to have her. We'll talk a little bit. I'll have her talk about her new book coming out pretty soon. And then she may have at least one or several others coming out subsequent to that. So we're excited to hear from her about all that. And also have all these questions to ask her about how she was able to write the book and also a lot of research, I think, went into your book. And I think, you know, if you're about, you can certainly have that. And so anyway, without further ado, G.A. Anthony, thank you for being on the show.
Hi, Bruce. I want to thank you for inviting me to join you on your show and the privilege to meet Wayne as well. My name is G.A. Anthony. I'm the author of the historical novel titled Aftermath, and it will be available on Amazon probably within the month. Right now, we're having to get some different things we'll talk about during this cast. But here's a copy of the outside of the book. And so you can look for this on Amazon. It's Aftermath.
All right. Hey, do you have a copy of the back cover? Do you have a picture of the back cover?
Well, I sent you the cover.
Yeah, it's on the same device I'm using the show with. But
yeah, maybe we could do a link to it or something.
Yeah, no. And what is my role called?
So Bruce was so awesome to give me a testimonial. I sent him Galley with the first three chapters. It's over 300 pages. So I sent the Galley to Bruce, and I wanted his testimonial because I felt like he had a lot of background with his degrees. And the chapters are very quick-paced, and they're all people-oriented. It's a lot of emotion and personalities coming into the book.
Yeah, absolutely, and a testament to the thorough research you did, and also your ability to kind of capture what was obviously what you're writing about, and be able to portray it. I think as I was reading it, I felt like I was reading kind of a novel, interesting.
That's what comes when you do proper research. When anybody can write about anything they want, it can be fiction, it can be nonfiction, but the research that you put in is going to yield what you get at the end.
And certainly is going to pay high dividends for you. And so it was a pleasure to be a part of that and hopefully get to read subsequent works from you. And that'll be, plus I'll, anything that any subsequent works, that deal with the criminal element, I'm going to have two jeweler's glasses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You better be on your money, sister. No,
I'm hoping that Bruce will join me in the interview to write about is based on my experiences. And that goes to tell you when you're writing, you need to make sure that you have experience in it because, we'll talk about that later. I've got a whole slew of questions to answer. But, always you're pulling from your experience. And I was employed by the IRS Criminal Investigation Division in the Western District in Austin. And we had so many stories for me to write like I said, hopefully with Bruce's extensive background in criminology and psychology, I mean, he can really add to the book. Maybe we can do a novel together, I'm hoping.
Yeah, these days, yeah.
So, is this an Is this a novel that is coming out? I mean, is it a, so is it fiction?
So, Wayne, what happened was that the book came from Antioquia and landed in Austin County to the death of the last brother, which is 1938. So, Wayne, everything in the book, I mean, I can tell you exactly where I got it. It's all fact. But the reason I wrote it as a novel is because I wasn't physically there to hear conversations. But with my psychology degree, like Bruce said, we had gone to college together. It gave me the opportunity to really engage that degree and think about, if I was that person, how would I feel? And so when you're writing, you need to make sure that you're in the right generation, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like myself at 21 could not have written this book, because I don't know how somebody feels when they lose a child, or I don't know how somebody feels, not that I lost a child, but you know, when you get in your 30s and your 40s, you start getting experience, you can write more fluidly and you can hopefully make the reader feel like they are there. So that's why Wayne, I made it into a novel format.
I read every book Alan Eckert ever wrote.
Oh, okay.
If you ever heard of him or not. It's about the Shawnee Indians mostly, and the early America days. And it was the kind of book that you would be reading it, and about every second page was a footnote that you had to go to the other half of the book and read the facts. You know, he just put it into a narrative of now. And it was like they were talking.
Exactly. And one of the things that my editor, who is Ken Kesselis of Bastrop County, he's written several books about Bastrop County. He's renowned. I mean, he's got his own exhibit in the museum there. This book reads so fluidly when generally history is a dry subject. And then you're having to go back and forth for references. And in my book, I have the references on one page. The pictures are within. I have the actual pictures of these people. For example, here is the family.
Oh, wow.
Probably 1906.
Cool.
And I actually wasn't planning on writing a book, but what happened was at my closing, the former owner literally gave me this picture and said, every time this house sells, this picture goes with it. And wow. So as soon as I got that, that's when I was like, who are these people? And I was able to, through a lot of the things I learned at the IRS about finding information, I was able to locate the grandson of Mr. Joseph Leshiger. And I'm so excited because, I don't know, I think I went on Find a Grave. So in my book, another thing, if anybody wants to write about history or finding things, all those references are where I found them, whether it was at the courthouse or Find a Grave or Ancestry, wherever it was, because the person that's posting the picture, say, they have a little name at the bottom. You can click on that and send an email. So all these different platforms, you can contact these people. And then one day in the summer, I was out watering my grass and this car pulls up and it was the grandson. And I was like, I felt like I was seeing a celebrity, because he came in, he told me which walls were here, which walls weren't here. And it was, for me, it was a thrill, because his name is Joseph Esta. He was a district attorney here in Gaffer County. And it was, I loved it. But I love people like that. So
yeah. And I love history. So I'm 100%. I can't wait to read it. I'll be watching for it.
I want you to read it and then give me any commentary, because like I said, I'll be continuing writing. It'll be a different subject, but I would love your input.
I love history. I'm telling you, I am a history nut. I love it.
Isn't it the best? Because one of the things I found was that as I was doing, so what happened basically was I was doing research. It's like a thesis to get your marker. You have to submit documents and prove how old it is. You have to have a picture of the house from that time frame, which by connecting with the family, they provided me with pictures. So there's a name on there. And if you click on it, you can send them an email.
Wow. Excellent.
So that's kind of like a little tip on, you know, if you're doing something historical or something. And then, so the bigger thing that happened was, as I was doing this research, it took me about 6 months to do it because there's a lot of forms, and I was digging through anything. I want to put a props out to North Texas University. They have a site called the Texas Portals, and they've got newspapers from like 1835.
Wow.
So North Texas University did, literally, people from different counties will send them information like the newspapers or what have you, and North Texas University will put it on. So it's called Texas Portals. So you can find anything. You can find anything from like T5 or wallpapers for Texas. I mean, it's for Texas.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. So in addition to the research, did you ever, let's talk about some of the things that you overcame to get the book done and finished. I know a lot of people go through several stages. I know I have co-authored several books, and there's always kind of like, okay, you're hot on the idea, and then maybe you even get started, and then you run into some challenges somewhere after the start, and for some it's hard to finish. So I was going to ask, what types of things did you encounter in your book that you had to overcome from an authoring perspective?
So I would say this, first of all, the biggest thing you can do to be successful, because I'll look at it from that view. So how can I be successful? So one thing, if you're writing a cookbook for the family reunion, then, you know, that's a little different animal. But if you're writing something that's longer, like mine is over 300 pages, then you've got to have like certain tools. And these tools aren't expensive, but you have to have them. So the first thing you have to do is use your iPhone or your device to put notes down. Anytime you think of something, you put it in there. No matter if you're teaching a class or whatever you're doing, stop and put it in there right away, because you're going to forget it. The other thing is, you've got to have an outline. I know people that write things like romance or things are just continuing with two or three characters on and on and on. You can really get lost in that. So, for example, in my book, what I did was, because I was covering all these stories that happened in my town, I said, okay, chapter one, obvious. They're coming over from Czechoslovakia. They land in Albany. Chapter two, I'm connected by the characters. What I did was on Joseph's brother. So my Leshikers, I call them my Leshikers, because down the street is the other family, the Charles Leshikers. Charlie tells you the story. So another thing to do is, if you're writing a book, whether it's romance or whatever, I feel like if you've got somebody guiding you through, saying, and this was my grandfather, and yada, 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 and then, and now I'm born. And so you kind of have somebody taking you through it, whether it's romance or whatever. So in essence, a really good thing to do when you're writing a book is, people aren't the same as they were when I was in my 20s. Like, we didn't have all these devices. So you're reading books, listening to, you know, CDs and such. Okay. So today's people, they may say, I got 15 minutes. So in you can read about a different episode that's happening in their lives. So if you're writing something that's romance, or you're telling a long, long, one solid story about two people, then you still need to have an outline to say, okay, they meet at the beach. Chapter two is they get in a fight. Chapter three is they reconnect. So in order today to get people to finish your book, you're going to have it styled in such a way where they can walk away from it, and maybe the next week they can read the next chapter, where they're not forced to go all the way back and say, well, I don't remember what she said to him, or I don't remember, you know, this, that, and the other. So a good rule of thumb is, make sure that you end the chapter on an ending. And then your outline. So you have to do your outline. And it's like you said, Bruce, it's going to change. And that understand that this is a process. It's not going to be done in 5 weeks.
That's right.
And if you're really good and you really love your subject and you want to be accurate, then you're going to be willing to change things. Just like you said, Bruce, you have to be willing to do it a different way. Or you may get a thought in the middle of the night and say, gosh, this would be better. I'm going to change it. And you're invested. You have to say, I'm invested in this. And no matter how it turns out, I'm going to finish it. And that's the way.
There you go.
Involved is okay. You can't say I'm going to finish it in 10 years because you won't.
Right.
But if you say, okay, I'm going to finish this within 12 months. And then that's going to help you to see a goal.
Well, now sounds like, and I'm like you, I'm in terms of, the fact that you follow had an outline as a guideline, not as a, but you know, you had that outline. That was good to help kind of pace yourself. I think that's really good. And that you were flexible. You allowed yourself to make changes as they occurred. I thought that was really good. And then lastly, so many people don't get their books published because they don't finish them. And so you said, speaking for me, it's like, hey, once I'm done, I'm done. I'll proof it. You know, nothing's ever going to be perfect, right? But just at some point, hit, we're at a good, solid, done point. And let's put a stamp on it.
And that goes in.
Go ahead.
And that goes to you said something that you prize, something you're mm-hmm. investing your time, you're investing your research in it. And the thing about it is that a lot of people don't finish their books.
That's right.
They don't. And so if you can tell yourself, you know what, I'm going to be the one that 25% that finishes the book, no matter if nobody reads it, no matter if nobody sees what I'm saying, I'm going to finish it because it's something that I did. You know, you have to think of it as a possession.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Vincent Van Gogh. He was not famous until several years posthumously.
Right, right. So that, you know, this first novel of yours, you know, it's good from a historical perspective. It could be in Texas libraries and university libraries all over Texas. Anybody that is an appreciator or just history or whatever would also want your book as well. And so I think it really does have an organic, wide enough audience, you know, consumer audience to make it, you know, really, really successful. So that's really cool. So what things did you have to overcome? It sounds thus far, you've just kind of sailed through it. I had my outline, I made my changes, I got through it. But did you have any struggles?
So for me, I would probably say the only struggles came at the end. Writing the book was not a problem for me because one of the things I want to tell your viewers is that when you get started writing something, it doesn't matter what the subject is. You have to go out and make connections. People that know more than you or have information you don't have. So for example, let's say that somebody goes to the beach and they see a oil well out in the middle of the ocean. And they're like, geez, I think that's so fascinating. I want to write a book about oil rigs. Okay. But maybe this person doesn't know anything about them, but that shouldn't stop you because you have to think out of the box. Okay. And the thing that you need to remember is that people love to talk about themselves. They love it. And if you can get them going, they'll reveal a lot of things to you. So let's say you want to write this book about oil well rigs in the Gulf Coast or what have you, Louisiana, Texas, whatever, Mississippi. So, but you don't know anything about them. So what would you do, Bruce?
Get some content area experts, right, on the oil fields and get them to talk about themselves.
Exactly. So it was me. And I would say, hey, I'm writing something about oil rigs and I need some background or some interesting things right. that the general public doesn't know. And maybe they turn me off and say, ma'am, you know, nobody here wants to spend time talking to you about their job. So then, but you don't stop. Then you say, okay, why don't you tell me somebody that's retired that I can call?
There you go.
And like, I have a book that I haven't finished that I wrote in the 90s, but it's not finished. And I needed to find out about electric shock therapy from the 1950s. Because I had a family member that ended up down at Galveston UTMB and got that in 1950. So, I mean, hopefully it's changed since then. I would hope that it's changed since then. So anyway, I was like, how can I? So I got the nurse's notes. So I literally had the nurse's notes about what they were doing with my family member. But I didn't understand, of course, right? Hey, you know, I know this building, the building didn't even exist anymore on their campus. And I said, hey, I know that, you know, I'm trying to do this. Y'all sent me these forms. Is there anybody you can think of? So I just talked to like the clerk and I said, is there anybody you can think of? And they go, well, there was an intern that was there in 1950 and she's a psychiatrist and she's retired, but she lives in Galveston. Would you like her information? Well, yeah, I want her information. So I was able to go to her home. She welcomed me in her home.
Oops.
It's okay. Maybe she'll catch up here. But okay. Yeah.
Boy, this is interesting.
It is.
This is wild.
I love her passion. I love her energy. Obviously, she just muscled through it, you know. Had a research knocking on your door saying, Mr. Fritz, I'm writing a documentary on how to sell Salad Master.
Yeah. Do you have a few minutes? Yeah. Four days later, I stopped talking. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yep. Yep.
Well, she'll be back.
Yeah, she'll be back. Hopefully, she'll be back. But that, no, that's, you know, I'll just love her passion and energy. And I'm on the back cover of the book. That's why I was trying to allude to that. My endorsement or my testimonials on the back of the book. So that's good.
Yeah. I'm a very avid reader. I try to read at least one book on that.
Yeah. I read a lot too.
The older I read some good stuff and then I read junk.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, I just read entertaining, good novels. I got my favorite authors. And anytime anything comes out, I got it, man. So I like Cleese and, you know, the stuff that's happening today in the world that, where you get these heroes, you know, that go solve the problems. And
I'll tell you.
Vince Flynn.
Yep. I'm a member of AARP at my magazines over there. And they do a good job of harassing you every day with either a magazine or an offer for something. And had I not been a government retiree, I really would have looked at. Anyway, I love reading. What's the future of Social Security? Shoot, I'm reading an article. 10 ways that 55 and overs can save a ton of money on travel. Oh, shoot, I'm going to read that.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Like, they do a good job of suckering me in with, you know,
they stuff. Sure do.
I think, wow.
I'll tell you, I was a very good, maybe shouldn't say it, but I joined ARPA as soon as I could. And then when I found out that they were going the wrong direction, I canceled it as quick as I could.
Oh, really?
A couple of elections ago.
Oh, you know what? There is a conservative version of it now.
Okay.
But I forgot. I was reading about it. Anyway, I mean, I'm a sucker for.
I like all that stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. There was no, believe me. Oh, my God. You go south of north with me politically. We got problems. So I've even heard that. Any about different types of written material. Anyway, so you were able, that woman welcomed you into her house and you had a great interview and learned a lot.
I learned everything about how they do electric shock therapy in 1950. So I didn't finish the book, but here's the thing that I want your viewers to also know. It's okay if you don't finish. I mean, you need to finish. All right, the goal is you want to finish. But if you get sidetracked, let's say you have a down day. Let's say that you got a bill you didn't expect or you got in a fender bender and you're just not there. You're not going to be there, right? Mentally, you're not ready to write your next chapter. So, but the thing is, you have to write something. And when you write every day, you could write a letter to the person that hit you in the fender bender and you're not supposed to have from a medical or something. You can call them and then write them a letter, physically write them an email. Because what happens is, I know this is my generation, but you have a roll. My brain is a Rolodex and it's got everything there. I remember everything. But what if I'm, if you're writing every day, you are hitting that part of your brain. I'm not a neurologist, but you're grooming that part of your brain, just like you would if you go out and shoot hoops every night.
Right.
You want to, you know, so when you write something or write a letter to somebody, you know, do you snail mail, you know, write to somebody, do something. Because it stimulates that part of your brain. It gives you access to higher levels of vocabulary so you can write literally and literately and not sound like you're in the eighth grade again. And the other thing that I'm trying to accomplish with this book is that, so I was teaching middle school age kids and they are, to me, middle school, nothing is funny, you know, whatever. So when I wrote this book, I read chapter one to my eighth graders and I said, hey, would you check this book out of the library? And I showed them the cover and they were like, yeah, it's really great. You wrote that? And I said, yeah, I wrote that. And so the thing about it is that just keep going, just keep going. If something happens in a bad day, don't write that day. Big deal.
Right.
You know, write an email, do something. You have to keep that part of your mind stimulated.
Keep it going.
The only thing that I came across that I had a problem with was finding time. That was my biggest problem because I was working and I need to go to courthouse, Bashaw Courthouse. And when you're, especially if you're doing history, you probably can talk about this, Wayne, that when you go down to the courthouse, you're going to be there for several hours, especially looking at the archive, right?
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the biggest problem I had, because I love my subject, and that's the thing too. Right now, if the viewers do not love the subject, do not even try to write it because you're going to have a high level of writer's block. You're going to be hitting a wall, hitting a wall, hitting a wall, and you're going to start hating your project.
Yeah.
You're going to be resentful because you're going to say, look, I've already invested $150 in these copies, or I've already invested. I missed that event because I stayed home and worked on my book. So make sure you love the subject. And on that same note, if you don't, change the subject. Write about something else.
There you go.
I mean, everybody can write about something. Everybody can write about something. You could be, it doesn't matter if you're white collar, blue collar. You could be a server in a cool restaurant. And you know that person has a lot of stories to tell, particularly if they work the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And people reading, I'm just like a normal person. There's nothing special about me, but there's nothing not special about me at the very same time. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so if you're a server and you're writing about all these people that came in and did these ridiculous things, people need comedy in their lives too. So they want to, you know, and to me, the comedians are stupid. I don't really like them. So I would rather read a book about funny stories. You know, Bruce, I know in your background, you probably have a million stories you could write about that everybody would find interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I need to write a book.
Yes, you
do. Yeah, you need to write a book.
I'll write you a testimonial.
Yeah.
On your book.
There we go. You know, on at least two publications that I was a closer, and for whatever reasons, they were stuck in the mud, and I walked up in there and turned it around and got it out. You know, and got it published, and two of them were self-published.
Mm-hmm.
So were they self-published? Yes. And so, but hey, you know, and they got out and things went well. And so I, you know, it's so fun for me to, I mean, of course, I was a content area expert on these books, so it's not as if I didn't know what I was talking about, but it was just walking into somebody else's stuff, you know, reading it, embracing it, you know, talking to them about, hey, here's my thoughts of where this could go. How do you feel about that? And so it was kind of fun to be a closer, honestly, because I felt they had done the heavy lifting.
And the thing, Bruce, that is, you do the heavy lifting, because it's just like, it's the same thing as when, like a student says, hey, can you finish this for me? So not like you could do it quicker yourself if you started all over, right? So you could have written that book quicker by yourself. And that's the challenge too for people to understand. Right now I'm doing a novel with Ken Kesselis and some other authors. It's hard because when you have a disagreement, and I don't know why we have six people, so it's always three and three. So it's like a huge problem.
Right.
But let's talk about publishing, because a lot of people don't understand that, and that's a really heavy subject. So let's talk about that. So you had mentioned self-publishing. There's basically three ways to publish, basically. So if you're not a publishing house is in the United States, if you send a manuscript to one of the big houses, I'm not going to use their names, but there's three big houses or four maybe, they're going to throw it right in the trash. If you feel like your book is so good that you can get one of those houses to publish, you got to hire an agent.
Right.
You have to have an agent going in saying, look at this book. This is amazing. This is it. You got to have somebody selling it. And agents are not cheap. Okay.
No,
then
there's
self-publishing. No, they're not. So there's self-publishing, like you were talking about. Self-publishing is awesome. It's for people that want to get their book published and they just want to get it published, or it's a recipe book for the reunion, or it's a book for a person, like you're writing a book for a person. You can go to Kinko's or one of those places and they'll copy it and put the little plastic binder on the back and you're good. Okay. Which is what I did.
Okay.
So there's a lot of small publishing houses. For example, I submitted my manuscript to UT Publishing, University of Texas.
Wow.
And they said, it's great, but we don't publish novels.
Oh, wow.
We don't publish historical nonfiction. That's what we publish. But you know what? They gave me a link to a smaller publishing house that they thought might. So somebody at UT went out of their way to take the time to say, hey, but why don't you check this one? So
that's cool.
So the smaller houses are good. And here's the other thing about the smaller houses. So with the smaller houses, they offer other things. Hmm. Okay. So I have a publishing professional that's working with me. So I don't have all the software to make the book look like a book, right?
Right.
And it's expensive, and it would take, I don't care about technology. I hate it, but you know, whatever. So this person that works with me, he goes through and sets it up and puts the pictures. And I went out and took the photograph for the cover with my Nikon and some other pictures. But I mean, I don't have the wherewithal because I don't have that software and I don't care about that. All I care about is writing a story. That's just how I am.
Right.
So when you go with a smaller publishing house, they're going to offer you things. Here's another thing you might not know. If you look at the back of a book, you have what's called an ISBN number.
Yes.
It looks like a barcode.
Yes.
Okay. That is unique to your book. Now, here's the thing. Some people that don't have this wonderful agent that I have, thank you, Tom Collins, they will get their book, they'll self-publish it type thing, and then they'll get it on Amazon because you can do that. But Amazon will say, what's your ISBN number? They're only like, you can get 10 ISBN numbers for like $125. And that would give you 10 different books, right?
Okay.
If you say, yeah, let Amazon do it. You know, if you're going to be stingy and stuff, you're going to pay, because now guess what? Amazon owns that book. Because that ISBN is registered to who? Amazon.
Oh, wow. Huh.
So it's not the big favor that you think it is. It is not a favor at all, because now they just got your book. So another thing that people don't know is that, where's I going to go with that? There's ISBN number. There's like so many things that if you are not published, like my agent, he's published. He knows how to, you know, do the whole thing. Just like he could sleep and do the whole thing. So my suggestion is, if it's not for a person or for your family reunion, you need to look at the smaller options they give you to get somebody on board with you to tell you what you need to do. Like another thing, your book cover is real estate. Even the spine is real estate.
Yes.
When you have your book somewhere and somebody walks in, and you have a picture of an apple on it, or you have a picture of like a cemetery, like mine has. Which one are you going to pick up, the apple or the cemetery? The cemetery, right. You're going to pick that up. So, and in the back has a testimonial. Bruce's testimonial is on the very back. There's only two testimonials on the back. This is one, and then the judge, who's a friend of mine, who's written a book, he is on the back. So every bit of that cover is real estate that you need to
maximize.
You can, yeah, to get them to say, hey, I'll spend $14.99 or whatever. And that's another thing. When you price your delivery, $25 for, I mean, it's got to be pretty special to be $25.
Yeah.
But then again, here's the thing. Here's the great thing. So let's say you get your book on Amazon and all this, and then you're like, okay, well, good. No, you do not sit back. No, you don't. So what you do is you go to the library and you say, hey, I will come in and read my first chapter, or I'll read for an hour, and then can I sell my books? And then they'll get audience in there for you. Another thing is the public schools. They have what's called book fairs. And it's like in May or something. And the kids come and buy books left and right. Okay? They want the authors there. So you can go to the book fair. Okay? Another thing, go to the festivals and get a booth and sell your book.
There you go.
So you know what I would do, though, when I do that, is I also make this killer salsa. So I'll be selling salsa with my books and have like free little... You know, here this little nobody's out there with a table, and we're trying to sell our books. And basically, I've read every book written about Smithville. And so when somebody comes up, I'll be like, hey, you know, I'll look at them and say they're not really a reader, or maybe they are. So we have different books. So we have a small book, and it's written by this lady from like 1922, and she was already elderly in 1922. It's about the Indians that are here, it's about everything. And it's like a personal account. So when somebody came up, I was like, I can get them. So I'm like, hey, why don't you buy this book from us? Because this book is about, and I'll tell them a story out of the book.
Wow.
So, yeah. So
she should be working for you, Wayne.
Yeah.
You need to understand that it's just like a musician. So does a musician make a CD and then sit at home and eat crackers? No, they go to people. And if you are at a venue and you're selling your book, sign it. There's reasons for that. You sign it so they connect to you and they remember you and they'll buy your next book. You sign it because if they take it home and another family member sees it, mm-hmm. like a sister or an adult or brother or whatever, and they go, wow, what is this book about? And you're like, it's the best book ever. I love this book so much. And they're like, well, let me borrow it. No, because when you autograph something, that person wants that. All my books that I have, I always get the author to autograph them. And so you're going to make another sale, because then that person will say, well, they'll say, just go buy it off of Amazon. It's like $14.99. Go buy it. And so you're selling another book instead of not signing it. And it's like a psychological thing, right?
Bruce? Right.
That's terrific. Excellent. Terrific. I mean, this is, man, you've got a lot of energy.
And then here's another tip that's really good. No matter what you're writing about, you need to be connected to that group of people. I moved here just because else. And then I start getting all this information that it's old by the picture and this, that, and the other. So I go to the Historic Society and I'm like, hey, what do you know about my house? You know, what do you know about the Leshkers? What do you know about this? And so then they invited me to be a board member, and now I'm an officer on it. Wow. Then that branched out, and Judge Poppy of Bastrop County, he invited me to join the Bastrop Historic Commission. So I've got this huge network now of people.
And that's what I meant when I misspoke.
So,
I
didn't mean to say museum. Whether you're writing about the oil rig or whatever, you need to make this connection. Do what?
It's the society. Yeah, because it's interesting. I my mother's side of the family, her dad's side of the family, came over from Germany, and I read in Ohio, and I went with a friend, and we went to the historical side, finding how they came up out of Kentucky into Ohio, and this was, in 1800.
Mm-hmm.
And they were an unsightly bunch of people, it said, you know. But they built a grist mill, and he was a minister, and they built a grist mill. This was all at the Historical Society.
Yeah, we have everything at the...
Oh, you get lost. You can just get lost. And then they scattered hither and yon, and even in Texas. So.
And Wayne, these are the untold stories that you need to preserve. Okay, because like you said, you love history like I do. These are the stories you need to preserve, because honestly, these stories in my book are more interesting than anything that's happening today. It's just more interesting. And and that's the thing too, is that I think the thing is something like you had said, Wayne, they had everything there. So one day when I was working at the society, you have to be willing to volunteer to be places. Also, they need to know you at the courthouse. They're like, oh, there's the lady writing about the Leshker. She's here. Yeah. You know, they need to know you. They need to know you. And then the other thing about it is that, for example, Wayne, I was doing the filing or something one day, something innocuous in the museum or the archives. And I found a document. It was like a written obituary for a stone carver. In that little description, I found out that that, in fact, is the stone carver that carved the statue that's on my cover. Huh. It was just written on a piece of paper. So when I wrote my book, guess what? I was able to put his name in there. I use the real names. So I was able to use his name. And then I found a doc where he went to the Austin Plan. Do you remember about that? The cotton plan where it was a depression and the governor said, no, you can only harvest a quarter of your field. And you're going to, you know. So I found a letter he had written to the governor. I mean, it's just remarkable what you find.
Absolutely amazing. I just love that stuff. I get goosebumps.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, wow. It's like, and then tell me if I'm wrong, Wayne, but you feel like these people are like your friends or something all of a sudden. Like, wow, I know all about this guy. This guy. And okay, so here's another example. Somebody brought a board, two by fours, but skinnier, like 1x4s, whatever, into the building. And on it, somebody had written in 1925, hey, it's me, so-and-so, remember me. It said 1925. So, and it was from one of the old houses that was built. So what do? I go out to the cemetery, I find him. For you, I say a little prayer. And it was like, man, I know this guy now too. And he was like 30 in 1925, and now he's my friend. And it's just like, yeah. So I go to the cemetery a lot. I find everybody out there.
I used to do that.
I love the cemetery. So one of the chapters is called The Murder of Dan Jenkins. And he was a constable. And he was shot in the street from a drunk. Okay, but here's the thing. The drunk was from one of the wealthiest families at the time. And they owned the bar. And this was like the cousin was over there. And he was a hothead. And he kills Constable Jenkins. Well, Constable Jenkins first was in my Leshiker's saloon because they had a saloon. So he was there. Hears the gunfire. Walks up a catty corner about a block. And gets killed, shot, mortally wounded. Mm. He just shoots him straight in the stomach. Then he's walking out. He shoots him in the back. He went to the saloon doctor. And he dies. And this is in the newspapers. I can pull all the newspapers and tell you this. So what happens afterwards is that I go out to the cemetery, right? I'm like, I gotta find him. Where is he out here? And I can't find him. But what I find is his twins. Here's a grave. Here's a space. Here's a grave. His twins. Then I find his wife at the feet of one of the sons. Then the daughter, and then her child who died young. And so I find all these, and there's this blank space. I'm like, I know you're right there, and there's no marker, right? So finally, I can't find an obituary anywhere. I have a whole court case. The court case is thrown out after 2 years because the family that killed him, the cousin, he was paying everybody not to be a witness, and they just disappeared. And the judge got so mad that he put a $500 bounty on these witnesses. They never appeared. After 2 years, they dismissed it. Wow. And then I know where that guy is because they're on Devon Fine, like 25 or something. Like that. So, crazy. I mean, to me, it's like, it's just fascinating. Yes. Everything I write about is fascinating.
I love it. I'm already lost.
That's all right. We're down to about 2 minutes. Just unbelievable. I tell you, the show goes so fast.
It really did.
So, you know, how can folks reach you, Miss Anthony? Do you have like a...
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel.
Okay.
So you can go on YouTube. It's G, capital G, period, capital A, period, Anthony, G-A Anthony. And maybe you'll be nice enough to put a link in it.
Yes.
It's just a YouTube channel. It's fascinating because I feature our town. I've got several little videos on there. They're short because people don't have time. And if you're going to put something out there, it's got to be quick. It's got to be to the point. What is it? What is it?
Well, email me the link, and I'll make sure I put the link in the show description. That'll be on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, excuse me. And it'll be on iHeartMedia. And so that'll go with it. So
thank you so much, Bruce, for this opportunity. And meeting you, Wayne, was a thrill as well.
Oh, thank you so much. I can't wait for the book to come out. I will get it. And then I will meet you and have you autograph it.
I will definitely autograph it. You just tell me where to meet you. I'll make it happen.
I'll do it. We'll do it.
Wayne and I have to get in Wayne's new GMC and drive down, or at least meet you in Austin or something.
Yeah, we can meet Austin or San Antonio or Houston.
Yep.
Are you in Dallas, Wayne?
Yeah, pretty close. I live in between Dallas and Fort Worth.
And maybe I'll just come up there then, since you're both there.
Both of us, yeah, we're within a couple miles of each other.
I'll do it, for sure.
Well folks, here we go. End of a wonderful book. Can't wait to see it. And remember, come to our social media. We're on the Concierge Coaches on Facebook, Concierge_Coaches on Instagram. I can be reached at ConciergeCoach.net. And Wayne, how can folks reach you?
They can still reach me with Wayne_515@yahoo.com.
Well, there it is. Well, everybody have a great week and a blessed week. Stay safe. And we'll see everybody here next week. We have another exciting guest for you. And we'll see everybody next week here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz only.